This is an ABC Radio National podcast. For full details, abc.net.au/rn.
Hello from Stephen Crittenden. Welcome to the Religion Report.
May we come to know one another better, strengthening the bonds of affection between us in our common wish to live together in harmony, peace, and mutual trust.
Başkası olma, kendin ol. Böyle çok daha güzelsin. Ya gel bana sahici, sahici. Ya danca gidersin. Başkası olma.
Well, this morning, ABC News has run two stories. One, that Pope Benedict has endorsed Turkey's entry into the European Union. And second, the fact that the Turkish Prime Minister has said that the Pope has endorsed Turkey's entry into the EU. The Vatican has said nothing. Prime Minister Erdogan made the comment while eating a large serving of humble pie, having been dragooned into standing at the foot of the stairs to greet the Pope and shake his hand when he arrived in Turkey today. This is a huge blow to Mr. Erdogan, and his comments were no doubt blurted out to pacify his millions of upset Muslim voters. We do not yet know the position of the Vatican on Turkey joining the EU. Well, we cross now to the city of Constantinople, where, as you will hear, sharpshooters are stationed on the walls of the ancient Basilica of Hagia Sophia. In fact, today's entire program comes from Turkey. The Pope arrived yesterday, and between his speech at Regensburg University in September and this visit to this great city that bridges the divide between Europe and Asia, there's a sense that something very important is going on, both intellectually and perhaps even in world historical terms. The original invitation to visit Turkey came last year from the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew. These days, the number of Orthodox Christians in Turkey has dwindled to a couple of thousand, meaning that this great figure in the Christian world is directly responsible for fewer souls than the parish priest of Cronulla. I don't need to explain how this parlous situation has come about. Today on the program, we're joined by Robert Moynihan, the editor of Inside the Vatican. He's a Catholic. And by Joshua Trevino, a convert to Orthodoxy, who's a former speechwriter and communications director in the Bush administration for the American Secretary for Health. And get this, he tells me he's been downloading a podcast of the Religion Report for over a year. They're part of a group which has established a new website, popeandpatriarch.com, to follow this tour. And they're both, in fact, in Istanbul. They spoke to me early this morning, Istanbul time, each on their mobile phones from different parts of the city. Robert Moynihan, Joshua Trevino, welcome to both of you. Let's start with you, Joshua. This website, Pope and Patriarch, was conceived by you. You're following the Pope to report on this visit. What's behind this idea?
Well, behind the idea is the notion that Catholics and Orthodox Christians need to work together a little bit more than they currently do. There's a long history of division between the two faiths, and they're really one faith. There's really one universal Catholic Church, and that's an idea that we need to bring back into currency in the modern age, particularly with the twin threats that the Pope is so adeptly identified of secularism on the one hand and radical Islamism on the other. These are things that threaten the Church, and these are things that Catholic and Orthodox need to work together to face. And so that's the idea behind popeandpatriarch.com. Which is the website that Mr. Moynihan has generously joined as well. So we're both here in Constantinople for the Papal Patriarchal event to that end.
Robert, you'd be well known to some of our listeners for your other website, Inside the Vatican. The Turkish government has done everything it can, I think, to discourage this visit by the Pope. The Prime Minister wasn't going to meet Pope Benedict, although it looks like that meeting might be back on. There have been demonstrations, security is extremely tight. Isn't this visit, in some senses, a mistake on the Pope's part? Certainly a huge gamble.
Well, I can't say whether he's gambling or not. I do think it's a historic moment. I wrote yesterday that it's a hinge of history. Geographically, we're in between Europe and Asia right here on the Bosphorus. I'm looking out over the water right now from my hotel room. And temporally, we're just 5 years really after 9/11. We are at a time when the Orthodox community here in Istanbul is down to about 2,000 people. Even though for more than 1,000 years it was the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire and the capital of Byzantine Christianity. And we visited an island yesterday where one of the great Orthodox monasteries is down to three men, used to have 100, 150. All the patriarchs of the last 150 years studied there, but it's been closed for 35 years, since 1971.
This is the seminary at Halkis.
Yes, the seminary at Halkis. It's on a mountaintop on an island, a beautiful spot. And this is something the Turkish government has been asked to remedy. They are putting pressure on the Orthodox Christians here. And when the Pope visits, he's giving them a tremendous boost. That's why Josh is putting this on the website. And the Pope does want to have better relations among all Christians, Western and Eastern. And the Turkish government, I think, wants to have good relations with the Pope. And they're going to do everything they can to have a safe and peaceful visit. And the Prime Minister now is going to be meeting with the Pope and showing how important he thinks this visit is.
Well, you mentioned the seminary at Halkis. Benedict is visiting at the invitation of the Ecumenical Patriarch, Bartholomew, visiting Turkey. In some senses, is this a visit that highlights the isolation of Turkey's Christian population, surrounded as it is often by real hostility?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Josh.
Well, not only is it a social hostility, as Robert has pointed out, but it's also an official governmental hostility. The Turkish government has done almost everything, not quite everything, but almost everything it can to slowly squeeze the Ecumenical Patriarchate out of existence. The closure of the theological school at Halki is an excellent example of that. The strictures upon property ownership and rights, what we would consider in the West basic religious freedom, is really an example of the Turkish government's longstanding desire to see the Ecumenical Patriarchate essentially disappear. So in that sense, the Pope's visit is a much-needed boost. Now, the question is going to be for the Turks whether they value their relations with the West and with the Pope more than they do this longstanding goal of seeing the Ecumenical Patriarchate go away.
Mm. Well, just let me ask again, I guess, the headline question there. What does this visit mean to the Orthodox world?
It's a lifeline. Really, the major moral and religious figure in Western Christianity. Orthodox Christianity here in its ancient land of Anatolia, Constantinople, is very, very threatened. And so for the Pope to come and lend his public support merely by his presence is a tremendous gesture. It's a gesture of generosity and love on his part, and it's something that we Orthodox are very grateful for. Whether it's going to make a difference in the long run, that remains to be seen. There's a long history of decline for the Orthodox here in Turkey, and that may not reverse itself anytime soon, papal visit or no.
Robert Moynihan, the Pope's Regensburg speech in September, with its quotation from the 14th century Byzantine Emperor Manuel II Palaiologos, it struck me at the time that one thing he was doing in that speech was speaking in code to the Orthodox. Irrespective of what he might have been saying about Islam, he was also saying that Christianity is Greek.
Yes, that's absolutely true. It's an epical speech that he made, and we're still trying to interpret, and no one even knows what he fully intended and whether what happened afterwards was what he imagined would happen. But there's no doubt that September 12th will be, in some ways, 5 years and one day after September 11th, will be another historic day, 9/11 and then 9/12/2006, where the Pope kind of placed himself right at the center of the debate that had been going on already for several years about these cultural and religious issues that are dominating our time. He interjected himself into that debate and brought along with him the Orthodox community by citing a Byzantine emperor. So your point is well taken.
Robert, I wonder whether, in fact, a lot of work isn't going on in recent months behind closed doors to repair the damage perhaps done by John Paul II in Rome's relations with the Orthodox.
Well, I wouldn't say that John Paul caused damage. There were problems in the sense that with some of the Orthodox communities, the Polish community and the Russian community are not on the best terms, and so he was unable to construct bridges to the Russian Orthodox. And he was considered by the Greek Orthodox somehow in not as favorable a light. He was a trip to Greece that wasn't well received. However, he was continually trying to launch signals and bridges to the Orthodox community, and Pope Benedict is continuing that. There's a phrase I like to use. It's all of European history is a long nostalgia for Rome. And there's a sense in which the division of Europe, the East-West division, Greek-Latin division, Catholic-Orthodox division, has marred European history. It's been a thorn or a wall down in the through the middle of Europe, cutting through the Balkans and Poland on the one hand, Catholic but Slavic, and then all the other Slavic countries Orthodox. To resolve this is important for the whole future of Western civilization, and the Catholics and the Orthodox for centuries have thought and believed and hoped that they could make progress to solve this. But for some reason, for human fallibility and for property and for other reasons and for pride, they've been unable to do it. This Pope is coming here partly to help that along, but he's also not visiting Turkey to make any condemnatory remarks about Turkey. He's here to visit, and as a visitor, he wants to see the country. His foreign minister announced the other day that he's coming to Turkey with great esteem and affection for the Turkish people. So I don't think this is a visit. It could be that this visit, if it ends peacefully and if the Pope makes some beautiful speeches, and he's quite capable of doing that as a poetic and eloquent speaker, this could be a turning point in a very positive way.
Robert, can I just ask you before we conclude, Regensburg, it seems to me, has also exposed the fact that we're seeing very definite factions inside the Vatican in relation to Islam. And there was a very peculiar editorial in recent weeks in Civiltà Cattolica, the magazine of the Jesuits in Rome, which is often seen as the authoritative voice of the Pope. And it seemed diametrically opposed to what the Pope said at Regensburg in this editorial: pro-Hamas, pro-suicide bombers, sympathetic towards the jihad against the West. Very, very strange piece. What did you make of that editorial?
Well, there are currents, as you can imagine and as our listeners can imagine. They know things in Australia. They know things in the church. You've got some very conservative church people that would almost be crusaders in their mentality, restore Christendom, restore the identity of the church, and they would be opposed to secularism and to Islam to the extent that these things threaten that identity, the identity of the traditional West. That is a mentality in some circles, even in the Vatican Curia.
Even in the Jesuits?
There may be a Jesuit or two who does have that mentality, but the majority of them would have the more open, let's call it dialogue-oriented, and at some point even a leftist, although that's not really a precise term in this context. But yes, you're aware of these sort of more, we might call them left-leaning thinkers and theologians. And in some way, that thought also is present in the Roman Curia. The Pope does not have complete and total control of the mind and heart of every person that's working for him. And some of these people, over the years, have wanted to have not at all a kind of a renewed Christian identity. They want a more dialogue-oriented Christianity. And that was that attitude that came out in the Civiltà Cattolica editorial.
Well, you've said that left and right aren't really appropriate, but which side of the divide was this editorial coming from, do you think?
Well, more on the left side.
Right. Right, right.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, in closing, both of you, presumably you've been there a day or so now, just to give us a reflection, maybe beginning with you, Josh, about the mood in town?
Well, the mood in town is I think, a little less tense than what the international media has portrayed. There have been some demonstrations, and there have been some fairly large demonstrations. On the other hand, the Turkish state has definitely not shied away from putting on a show of force. I'm actually standing here under the Hagia Sophia right now, the great church of Orthodox Christendom, and there are sniper sharpshooters in the minarets surrounding it, so I think that there's going to be fairly good security. I think that the city is going to be a little bit jittery, but not too much. It'll be better than it's portrayed overseas, I think.
Joshua, I wouldn't think it would be the first time that there have been sharpshooters on those walls.
I think you're absolutely right about that. That's correct.
What about you, Robert, just to close?
Well, of course, many, many Turks are going about their ordinary business. I see cars passing under my windows. Everyone's going to work. But the front pages of the newspapers the last few days have been referring to the Pope's trip, and everyone is quite aware of it. And there are people who are fearful, in a sense, of the Pope visiting Turkey and being in some way critical of Islam, because that's the image that has been presented. So there are groups here, but our sense, Josh and I have not seen what you see pounding at you in the media, which is the demonstrations. And so there are small demonstrations, but we don't think at the moment that that's going to emerge. It's hard to say what's going to happen in the next few hours. The Pope is beginning his trip now down at Ephesus, not here in Istanbul or in the capital. Ephesus is where the House of Mary is. So he's beginning with a kind of mystical Marian dimension. Then he's going to move up to these major centers, and then we'll see what happens then.
Look, it's been wonderful having you both on the program. Thank you for persevering with the international telephone system. Best of luck.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
Robert Moynihan and Joshua Trevino, and their website is popeandpatriarch.com. On ABC Radio National, Radio Australia and online, this is the Religion Report. Well, there's some Beethoven for Pope Benedict, played by the great German pianist Wilhelm Kempff. In 1927, Kempff travelled to Ankara to advise Kemal Atatürk on the establishment of a Western conservatorium of music. The German composer Paul Hindemith became its first director. Atatürk apparently told Kempff that every great movement in human history has to be accomplished by music if it is to succeed. Well, Pope Benedict's comment a couple of years back that Turkey should not join the EU suggests that Atatürk's great vision of making Turkey a modern Western nation has failed. So what does this visit mean to Turks? I was in Turkey about 10 years ago to make a doco for Background Briefing, and on that occasion I interviewed leading political scientist Professor Ersin Kılıçlıoğlu. This week I tracked him down again. He's now the rector of İşık University in Istanbul.
Well, ordinary Turks, to the extent that we can understand from the polls and also their statements on the media, do not take this visit to be anything very serious, to tell you the truth. They are arguing that this is any other state visit. We are a hospitable people. We will welcome the visit of any foreign dignitary, and the Pope will be treated as any other foreign dignitary so far as the visit is concerned. So they see nothing peculiar, upsetting, or something to be anxious about, as far as I can gather.
Well, you're speaking to a very large audience in Australia, many of whom know from first-hand experience just how hospitable the Turks are. But is Benedict an unpopular figure in Turkey? We've seen lots of demonstrations on our TV news here in Australia.
Let me be very clear. He's not popular, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's unpopular. Most people in Turkey seem to approach this visit with some kind of apathy or disdain. His remarks about the Turks, not the very last one, not at his visit to a German university a few months ago, but his previous remarks about Turkish entry into the EU, his attitude towards Muslims in general, have been considered as creating an image of a religious person who shows intolerance toward another religion, in essence. Therefore, he is considered as being at least slightly hostile towards Turks in general and Muslims in particular.
What about the role of your Prime Minister, Mr. Erdogan, who, of course, is an Islamist? He is a member of the Welfare Party, I think. He's signalled, I think, in recent weeks that he's very uncomfortable about this visit. And I think it's no secret that the Turkish government early on tried to discourage this visit. He's sometime this week made a decision that he will meet Pope Benedict after all. How does this visit sit for him as an Islamist?
Well, let me clarify a few points in the beginning. First, he's no longer a member of the Welfare Party. That party was banned. He just came out of the ranks of that party, joined another political party in between called the Virtue Party or Fazilet Party in Turkish. Then that party was also banned by the Constitutional Court for its anti-secular activities. And then he established another political party, the Justice and Development Party, which is in power now. And this party is very sensitive or sensitized to this point that they are a conservative democratic party, whatever that means. So he doesn't want to come out as an Islamist as such. Furthermore, what makes the situation very interesting, he volunteered with Mr. Zapatero, the Prime Minister of Spain, to start a process called Alliance of Civilization, a very ambitious title, as you may easily guess. And he has been arguing, and his government has been arguing for the last couple of years, that Turkey, and in particular the current government, is in a position to start a dialogue between different civilizations, meaning Christianity and Islam. That's how he sees the world, more or less, and Turkey can play a go-between role in between. Now, for a person who is volunteering for such a role, his current position now is considerably curious and very interesting, simply because you would have expected him to become much more interested in this kind of a visit.
To have welcomed the Pope with open arms, in fact.
Well, see this as an opportunity.
Yeah.
And exploit it for his objective of establishing some kind of dialogue, at the least, on the way to an alliances of civilization. Therefore, you would have expected that he would be forthcoming and at the same time look forward to meeting the Pope and starting a dialogue with him and sort of invite him onto the bandwagon of Alliance of Civilization. That wasn't his attitude. For someone who was volunteering to play such a role, it looked as if he was trying to avoid meeting the Pope for a long time. So that's a little bit mind-boggling.
Now, what about the secularized, if you like, Turkish middle class? This Pope, as we've already touched on, has said in the past that he's opposed to Turkey joining the EU on the grounds that Turkey is Muslim and can't be European. How do secularized Turks, supporters of Atatürk's project of making Turkey a modern Western nation, how do they react to that? Do they, in fact, have special reason to be upset with this Pope? Because he says, in effect, your project has failed.
They're not upset, but they observe that there is a certain kind of reaction developing in the EU against Turkey, mainly coming from the Roman Catholics. You see, in the beginning, when we started on this road to becoming a member of what is now EU, what was then the common market in 1959, the Roman Catholics were enormously happy to see Turkey apply for membership. For then, there was a competition between the European Free Trade Area project of mainly Britain, but other Protestant countries in Europe, versus the common market argument of the Roman Catholics, mainly led by France and Germany. So Turkey seemed to be vying for the latter, that is the common market idea of the Catholics, rather than the EFTA, the European Free Trade Area idea of the British and other Protestant countries supporting that idea. So then they were trying to use the Turkish application as an indication of their credibility. And then they were tremendously happy, and they promoted Turkey until about the end of 70. From then on, it looked as if there was a changing of minds or mindsets about Turkey among Roman Catholics. Turkey was no longer useful for their idea or objective of establishing a union in Europe. And they started to be increasingly cold or getting colder to the idea of Turkish participation. And now they seem to be enormously, well, some of them at least, not all of them, but mainly Roman Catholics in France and also in Austria seem to be dead set against making Turkey a member of the EU. So the secular middle class in Turkey sees it from that perspective, that there is a Catholic naysayers to Turkey, and Pope is just echoing their emotion.
That's very interesting. You don't think, though, that all this tough talk now may well be in Turkey's best interests in the long run? It'll be good for Turkey.
Well, the tough talk now, I mean, Look, Turkey is a member to so many European institutions other than EU that taking Turkey out of Europe is almost impossible. So there cannot be...
Here in Australia, we watch the Eurovision Song Contest every year, and Turkey just seems to be part of Europe at that level, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, not only at that level, so far as, for example, Turkish cultural institutions, including universities are concerned, are members to all sorts of European institutions and European-wide organizations. Turkey is a member, founding member of Council of Europe. Turkey is a member of NATO. There's so many institutions in Europe to which Turkey is a member. So therefore, this relationship between EU and Turkey is not a relationship between Turkey and Europe. That's actually a misnomer or a misrepresentation of relationships. Therefore, you cannot take Turkey out of Europe by sort of turning your back at Turkey in the EU.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone put it that clearly before.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the situation. Therefore, if Turkish EU relations fall apart, it's going to poison Turkish relations with other European countries in all other European organizations. And that is going to create a lot of difficulties in Europe.
Nonetheless, I can hear many of our Armenian listeners here in Australia, and indeed many of our Orthodox listeners here in Australia, saying, listening to this, yes, but Turkey's got a long way to go in the area of religious freedom.
Well, so far as religious freedom is concerned, of course, Turkey's record is mixed, as it is mixed most anywhere else, where you have small minorities of one religion and a huge majority of another. These relations have always been difficult. There have been a lot of historical and therefore cultural conditioning, which is difficult to overcome so far as Turkey is concerned. And these run relatively deep. But mind you, most seems to come out of the end of the Cold War and this new world order, which we cannot find an appropriate name for yet. And this new order has actually made the Turkish population much more concerned about its own territorial integrity, where the borders of Europe have been changing since 1991 by the end of the Soviet Union. All borders around Turkey in the Balkans, starting with the collapse of Yugoslavia, and then in the Middle East, starting with the collapse of Iraq, and then in the Caucasus, starting with wars between Armenia and Azerbaijan, etc., have become negotiable. And Turkey is feeling enormously uptight about this process. This feeling of increasing insecurity has pushed Turkey towards rallying around some kind of stable, traditional anchoring symbolism, and what can be more constant than religion? Turks have become even more conservative, even more religious because of these developments. And also all around us, all our neighbors have become relatively more religious, more or less all of them.
And where does that leave the vision of the great genius Ataturk?
It does not necessarily undermine that. The division between the secular and the sort of a Sunni radical movements in the country is still there. It's going to be there for a long while to come, as far as we can tell. Its roots travel back probably about 300 years. But at the same time, secularism is also a robust phenomenon. And the division between the secular and the increasingly religious population seems to be holding in Turkey and influencing Turkish politics deeply still.
Look, it's been a great honour to have you on the program. Great to speak to you again.
You're welcome.
The rector of İşık University in Istanbul, Professor Ersin Kılıçlıoğlu. Well, that's all this week. We did promote that we'd be doing a story on the new Centre for Animal Ethics at Oxford University. I'm sorry about that, but we'll bring you that story next week. Meanwhile, if you'd like a transcript of this week's program, or if you want to join the people all around the world who are downloading the program to their pod, you can come to our website at www.abc.net.au.
reagan.org.au/religion. Thanks this week to our producers, John Diamond and Noel Debien. I'm Stephen Crittenden. See you next week.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs, more than 260 transmitters Australia-wide. And we're live on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/rn/podcast.